so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Coming up a little later on today's program, how the D.C. Water Wizards face their fears and optimize their years, and why your feet are actually the foundation of your future independence. A world-renowned foot doctor is going to share the importance of maximizing your health from your toes up. But first, the power and importance of intergenerational connection. For the past 2 years, Growing Bolder has staged our annual intergenerational, intercultural, interracial wisdom walk, in which we bring together strollers and wheelchairs. We've got toddlers, teens, and elders all taking a leisurely 1 mile stroll together. The idea is to share not only one another's company, but more importantly, their dreams, their fears, and their questions about one another. In just a single mile, friendships are made, bonds are formed, and stereotypes are smashed. We're encouraging intergenerational relationships as a way to confront the widespread ageism that is so rampant in our culture and to confront the damaging stereotypes about growing older, because one of the greatest gifts that we can give young people is simply a more optimistic view of growing older, because those who have a positive view of aging actually live on average 7.5 years longer than those with a negative view. And not only do they live longer, but more importantly, they're happier, they're healthier, and they can dramatically reduce their future health care cost. Eunice Lynn Nichols has spent more than 2 decades now bringing older and younger generations together. She is the consummate bridge builder, the CEO of CoGenerate, which is a nonprofit that's dedicated to a form of social impact that it calls co-generation. Older and younger generations all working together to solve our most pressing problems. So let's get with it as we welcome Eunice Lynn Nichols. Eunice, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast today.
You know, I appreciate so much. And let's do start with the mission of CoGenerate, because I know until about 18 months ago, I was following you guys as a company known as Encore, but you're rebranded. Why the change?
Well, we did spend more than 20 years focused on building the concept of Encore, this idea that we would create new pathways to purpose and continued contribution as people aged. We called it the Encore career. And the reality is, as we were doing that work, so much of it was focused on what older adults could and should do for younger generations. But in doing that work, we realized that the real magic was so often in the with, not just what they could do for younger generations, but what when older and younger got together, they could do together. We really leaned into that, as you said, about 18 months ago when we transitioned from being Encore to CoGenerate, to lean into that with part of the equation. Today, we're fully focused on what older and youngers can do together, bridging the divides, combating ageism, as you mentioned at the top of your show, and bringing older and younger together for the better of the world. And I'll add one piece to that, which is, I know you mentioned that young people can fear growing older, but the reality is when we focus on what older and younger can do for good in the world, there's actually a lot of desire in particular from young people to work with older adults for the greater good.
I appreciate you mentioning that. And honestly, as I was saying that, I'm thinking to myself, Eunice is not going to like this. But it is interesting because that's what we find here at Growing Bolder. You know, we've built a business by looking at aging through a prism of opportunity and possibility and not simply loss and limitation. And we do that by sharing the stories of ordinary people that are, you know, living joyful lives. And what we have found is that the message resonates with younger adults almost as much, and in many cases more than it does with older adults, because we are showing them something other than what our ageist culture has shown them. So thank you for that. But speaking of our culture, Eunice, we're living in a society that is more age diverse, but yet more age segregated than ever. What's the overall impact of that?
Yeah, I appreciate you starting here, because I think often we're not focused on the dramatic shifting demographics in our country. And so, like you said, we're the most age diverse time in human history. I don't think people understand that back in the 1900s, we had the twice as many young people as older people as you'd expect. But today there are as many people who are seven years old as 17 as 70. And so it just means society is shaped very differently. And that diversity can bring real opportunity for a connection across divides, for bringing different assets to the table. As you mentioned, I love the focus on opportunity. But on the flip side, we're also as a society structured to be deeply age segregated, oftentimes for the sake of efficiency. It's why we have young people in schools and middle people in the workforce and older people, unfortunately, often on the margins, off to the side. And it's the combination, I think, of incredible age diversity with deep age segregation in our systems that actually allows for ageism to rise and then spiral out of control, because it means young people aren't necessarily having the opportunity to get to know older people deeply and authentically, and vice versa. And when all you have is a stereotype of somebody that you see, possibly a bad actor that you might see in the news or in media, those stories start to proliferate. By and large, when I talk to younger or older people, there's actually somebody that they know, and somebody who's a relative, a grandparent, a grandchild, or a friend across the age spectrums that they deeply love, deeply care about. And when they can focus on the reality of somebody who's 20, 30, 40 years older or younger than them, they have deep feelings of love and respect for that person. If we can help more of those relationships and friendships to spread, I think in some ways that's the biggest tool we have to combat ageism, is actual knowledge of the other.
I know you don't need me to tell you that our culture needs you and your organization now more than ever, because it's not just difficult in many cases, in most cases, for different generations to get together. I think in a very real way, our culture pits the young against the old. I mean, there's this scarcity narrative, if you will, not enough jobs, not enough money, not enough opportunity. And it's easy to blame another generation for that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've kind of been forced into this zero-sum mentality where if a younger person gets something, resources, opportunity, the older person doesn't get it, and vice versa. I think that's one reason why we really are doubling down on the idea of co-generation. What does it look like to actually shift the systems and the models we have and look at places where older and younger together, both can succeed, both get what they need and want? We look at areas where older and younger are struggling with the same issues, as an example, and where turning to each other might solve one another's challenges. Social isolation and loneliness is one of them. Young people are reporting higher rates of loneliness than any other generation. And we know older adults often, because they're moving out of the workforce, the way society has age siloed them, end up on the margins and therefore more isolated. Older and younger friendships are actually a solution to each other's core fundamental challenge of isolation and loneliness. We also look at housing. Intergenerational housing is on the rise. I think it's four times more prevalent today than in years past. And one way to look at that is young people are struggling to be able to afford living on their own, to be able to buy that house. Older adults are struggling to age in place, to afford to live in the homes that they've been in forever. Neighborhoods are gentrifying. That also makes it more challenging. There's been a rise in innovation around older empty nesters opening up a spare bedroom to a young person at a discounted price and providing a little bit of help around the house. And as they're doing that, these wonderful sort of extended family-like relationships form, and both boats float. So we're really interested in places where that zero sum mentality does not need to be the norm.
It's great to hear what positive is happening. And I did see, this short note on some of your social media channels where you say, quote, you're obsessed with connecting across generations to create a new kind of extended family. Where did this obsession come from? Because I said in the intro, you've been doing this for more than 20 years. How did you get so interested and connected with an older generation and intergenerational connectivity at such a young age?
Yeah, so in some ways, I feel like this has been an obsession my entire life. It's always easier to look back at the narrative of your life and see the threads. I'm the daughter of immigrants from Taiwan. And like many immigrants, my parents, once they were settled, in the Midwest where I was born, they brought my grandparents over. So for the early years of my life, I actually lived with my grandparents. They were really critical in being part of helping me connect with my Chinese culture that otherwise would have felt very distant. They were my after-school program. They were there. Both of my parents were working, and my grandparents were there to be the safe place for myself and my sister as we were growing up. Fast forward to my sort of young adult life, and I ended up out in the workforce where I was, you know, both in college and then right after with young people. And that was great for about 2 minutes. And then I started to feel this sense of disconnection from, I think, a way I had been raised, really surrounded by extended family and aunties and uncles, some related to me, many not. But that's what felt natural to me. And I didn't find it in my natural work environment or in college until I landed at, frankly, the organization I'm at today. 3 years out of college, I went on to run one of our early signature programs. It was an intergenerational program that brought older adults from the neighborhood into public schools to help kids read. And it was my job to go out and find the elders in the neighborhood and recruit them into spaces where they were not represented, but they were where they were so needed. My other team that I had to work with, because we were a scrappy nonprofit, were these young AmeriCorps Vistas, young people doing like a year of national service, being paid at the level of poverty. They were in San Francisco where I was doing this work, but disconnected from the neighborhoods. And here I had these 200 elders that had lived there for decades. And that team of young adults at a formative time in their career, and frankly, I was only 3 years older than them, and this team of elders together went in to solve this issue of helping kids read by third grade. I'll say I often thought about that time as, wow, isn't it great that we have this relational capital that we're building that allows us to help kids learn how to read and write? Years later, I look back and I actually think we might have had it flipped. We had this great tutoring program that was the platform for delivering love and for delivering it intergenerationally. And I'll close by saying that the impact on me as a young person at that time is that I was surrounded by elders collaborating with them, which meant I saw their assets, their skills, the talent that they were still contributing. My oldest volunteer was 102 years old. And yeah, I went to funerals of volunteers who served until their very last day. To be a young person and see, I had all kinds of ageist views as well, but I also had this recurring real reality of older adults that I saw every day who were giving their very best in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond, who gave to the very last day, who were deeply committed to young people in the next generation. Who had fun. We had great potlucks. We had great parties. It was a group of elders in one of the neighborhoods that threw me my first baby shower. I was surrounded by love. And I think, once again, those things have prevented me from having the dominant ageist views in society be the talk track in my mind, because I just have too many data points that show me another way. And I also will say this is on the, it's not all, you know, rose-tinted glasses. I have a very real view, maybe more than many of my peers, on what it means to grow old, because I've seen that also. There are physical challenges, mental challenges, family dynamics, loss of income, many of those. I've seen that as well. So you can combat fear by stepping into it and actually knowing people who are in the midst of it and are surviving it. So that's a long way of saying that I think the importance of intergenerational relationships is the most powerful tool for combating ageism and helping young people step into older life with more confidence and compassion.
That's CoGenerate CEO Eunice Lynn Nichols underscoring a critical point. Ageist attitudes lead to unhealthy aging. We now are living in the most age-diverse society in history, and we have to resist the powerful pull to segregate age groups, which then leads to ageism, which in turn leads to unhealthy attitudes and behaviors. In fact, the CDC has now declared negative perceptions of aging a true public health hazard. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Eunice Lynn Nichols. This is Growing Bolder. We'll be right back. Join Boulder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingboulder.com/new65plus. Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. We're talking today with Eunice Lynn Nichols, who is the CEO of CoGenerate, formerly known as Encore, which begs the question, what does CoGenerate mean and why did they change their name?
We are borrowing that term from the energy sector, much like we borrowed our earlier term Encore for Encore Careers from the music area. When we were looking for the same resonance and landed on CoGenerate, intergenerational, obviously all our work is about intergenerational connection and collaboration. But intergenerational is a little too broad. You could have an older helping a younger, younger helping an older. Sometimes it's just the existence of older and younger together. The co piece really focuses on the dynamic connection between older and younger and how they can co-create, co-design, collaborate on more together. In the energy sector, it's really about how one form of energy, you can take the almost like the waste from what's created and funnel it back to create even more energy. So we love that visual and are kind of co-opting it for the social sector.
And by your definition, I mean, how is the work product better when we co-generate? What are your talking points when you tell somebody, when you tell a corporation, when you tell an organization or group to have a group that co-generates, how is it better?
Yeah. So there's actually growing research out there as well about the secret sauce of olders and youngers. A lot of it will feel very intuitive. I think right now, younger people are obviously they've been raised in with digital technology at the core. So much it means that they are used to a certain pace and speed of change. We have a multi-generational team right now at CoGenerate, and when it comes to how do we get the word out? How do we mobilize and organize? What are the messages that are going to resonate with culture out there? We can't do that without young people in the room. I found that having older folks in the room brings something incredibly important. Their ability to synthesize and look at complex systems to help us connect the past to the present, to the future, as well as having just lived through the ups and downs of a longer arc of life. When the pandemic hit, I found myself in a Zoom room that had older adults and younger people. The elders were so important because they had been through other periods in life where it felt like things were deeply falling apart and they had survived it and had the ability to say, this is the time to stay in relationship. Let's not churn and move straight to problem solving when we need to sit and be with each other and just connect. I think it takes a certain wisdom and years lived to know when that's the right move. And having said that, some of my most favorite relationships are ones where you have what we would call an old soul, a young person who has like just a pathway into that wisdom, and a modern elder, somebody who is older but is bringing the freshness of creativity. So even as I say that, it's really bringing two people together who just naturally are coming from different perspectives on life experiences and bring it to the table.
Fair to say there's a bit of a tug of war going on right now, Eunice. I mean, so much cultural momentum pulling us apart, you know, families disintegrating, moving apart. And in organizations like yours, people like you, research backing up what you do, underscoring the value of coming together. Is there a bit of tug of war going on right now? And if so, are you optimistic that you're going to win?
I think I'd love to focus your listeners or viewers on a report that we did about a year and a half ago with the University of Chicago and the National Opinion Research Center, because we in that tug of war, I think a big question, people are like, oh, you guys say older and younger want to come together to do good work together. But is that actually true? And I think people question whether or not it is. So we're like, let's go out and let's just ask. We had over 1,000 people answer a set of survey questions. And it turns out almost everybody, 96%, actually believe that cogeneration will make life better in America. And 93% said cogeneration will reduce divisions in our society. So there's actually incredible uniformity in the concept of it. But then we get to the flip side. Okay, why aren't more people coming together across generational differences to collaborate? And it turns out a large majority said that they don't see the pathways. So this gets to the age segregation of our society. Even if you want to be in relationship with somebody 20, 30 years older or younger than you, we're not structured that way. They don't know where to find each other. And then when they do, a large percentage are actually anxious because we have lost the exercise of the muscles for how to relate to one another, the language. I think there's some anxiety and fear that the other generation won't like them. I mean, it's kind of like friendship 101. You get nervous when you walk in and aren't sure how to engage. So to me, I feel like our research points to both the need for intentional structures for bringing older and younger together. As natural as it is, we need to make it easier. And then we also need to equip older and younger with some of the tools and skills for coming together. A lot of that's based on, these are just people, learn each other's life stories, get to know somebody first. If you're older, don't assume that the thing that you're bringing is advice and mentorship. That young person might be able to advise and mentor you. So come and understand each other's stories and gifts and skills first. And then how might we create more spaces that feel more equalized, where sometimes the power dynamic is skewed towards the older person, sometimes it's skewed towards the younger person. How might we actually intentionally design a space so that they're coming on more equal footing and allow for these authentic relationships to proliferate from there? The desire is there. I think it's on us to make sure that people can access it.
So short of waiting for an email from CoGenerate, how can individuals plug into the CoGenerate lifestyle?
I think a huge place where we can both practice and do good is to look for opportunities to get involved in your community, to volunteer, to step onto an advisory team, whatever. Find a space where you can actually collaborate with people of a different age, and don't just look for something with your own age cohort. I think that's comfortable. That can be more comfortable, but I would say take a step. And there are many places in your neighborhood that will have naturally intergenerational spaces. Your local food bank, your local community center, your local YMCA is going to have older and younger people together. How might you actually step into those spaces? Look for them. But even if you go there, I think our natural instinct is often to kind of stick with our own. I would say challenge yourself each day to, if you see somebody who is a bit younger or older than you, to go up and say hello, start a conversation, learn a little bit of their life story. I think it all starts with relationship. And some of the best ways to build relationships are to go do something with somebody. It gives you just enough scaffolding that it doesn't feel super awkward to go up and strike up a conversation. The benefit of taking a go experiment by volunteering and being involved in your community approach is you also make the community better as you do it. We have to kind of get ourselves out of our homes and out of our natural silos in order to do that.
And finally, if you will, can we pull out even a little bit further and give us an even bigger picture, Eunice Lynn Nichols takeaway? Because you are very much a bridge between generations, not young, not old, connected in very meaningful ways to both. What's the moral of the story of life? What have you learned that we all should know?
I think we are on the doorstep of the most age-diverse society we've ever been. We can continue to persist and walk through that in our own siloed ways, or we can have the courage to reach out and make a connection across age, across difference. What I would say is when we do it, we gain so much more. We can't be little islands. When you reach out to somebody 20, 30 years older, you're going to get all that life experience and wisdom along with it. And if you're an older person reaching down to a younger person, similarly, it's astounding how differently young people are thinking and operating today. If you build a friendship, a real authentic relationship with a young person, they will be your portal into how to be today. So I find that really exciting. There are a lot of opportunities for connection. This is not rocket science. This is not, you know, as much as I'd love to see overhaul in system supports and policies, that's necessary. But there's actually nothing preventing us from just reaching out to somebody in our neighborhood, in our faith institution, at the gym, at the grocery store, as we volunteer out in the world, somebody who's older or younger than us, and just start making those connections. We need to exercise that in order to get good at it. And I believe we can do it together.
Well, we are all grateful, or should be, that you find this so exciting and that you found your life's passion so early on. Eunice Lynn Nichols, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
You know, folks, she is leading a movement to co-generate, if you will, to create a more diverse culture and a more promising future for everyone of every age. And you can find out more about her and her mission at cogenerate.org. When we return, is barefoot better? One of the world's experts on your foot health. And then later, a story of inspiration and motivation from our nation's capital. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Well, as you guys know, here at Growing Bolder, we talk a whole lot about the opportunity of aging, the nearly limitless possibilities that are a part of this new age of active longevity. But these are only possibilities. They are only opportunities that have to be seized. And, you know, we have to be active participants in our own overall health and longevity. And in a very real way, we are all our own primary care provider. We're the ones that have to get it done. And the stakes can't be any higher. Multiple studies now show that 90% of adults want to age in place. We want to stay in our own homes. And the number one reason for that is a fear of losing our independence. And of course, independence is simply having autonomy, the ability to make our own decisions about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. Independence is fueled by physical mobility. Mobility dramatically increases our quality of life. It has been directly connected to improved mental health, to our heart health, resistance to injury, greater stamina and strength, a reduced risk of complications from all chronic disease, improved socialization, and a whole lot more. So obviously, maintaining mobility as we age is critically important to our quality of life. And that's exactly why I'm anxious to speak with Dr. Emily Splickel, who is a world-renowned thought leader in the field of movement longevity. She's a functional podiatrist and a human movement specialist who looks at the whole body organically and tries to correct problems with a holistic approach rather than simply a scalpel. She is the author of Barefoot Strong. She's the CEO and founder of Neboso Technology, which is an innovative company whose products actually improve movement, performance, and recovery through sensory therapy and what's called proprioceptive stimulation. And don't worry, we will get that explained for us. Dr. Splickel is known to her many followers as Dr. Emily. She's actively involved in barefoot training research and education as it relates to athletic performance, injury prevention, and movement longevity. She has served as a consultant to many of the world's top fitness, footwear, and orthotic companies, and she has presented her research in over 40 countries to over 25,000 professionals. So it's an honor, and I'm anxious to chat with Dr. Emily. Dr. Emily, how are you doing today?
I'm doing incredible. Thank you so much. And your intro, as far as people taking ownership of their health, resonated so authentically to me. So powerful intro.
Well, I appreciate that. And let's start with Neboso, because I've read that it means barefoot in Czech. So what intrigues you about going barefoot? What is the science behind taking our shoes off?
Absolutely. So taking our shoes off, stimulating the nerves in the bottom of the feet is a really powerful way to access the brain. And what I was taught in podiatry school is that our feet are much more mechanical, that we have high arches, low arches, that we think of our foot as far as orthotics and supportive shoes. But what's often overlooked is the powerful sensory side of the foot, namely the skin in the bottom of the foot, which has special nerves. And our foot is designed to read each step that we take, to adjust to the ground and the surface that we're walking on. And in fact, that's actually what controls our movement. So the more that we feel the ground, the better our movement, the better our balance. And then, of course, that topic of movement longevity is very much linked into connecting, tuning into, and feeling the sensory side of our feet.
You know, I try very hard and not often with success not to jump to any conclusions about anything. But I have to tell you, when I see someone on the street, I immediately think I can tell something about their overall health, or at least their biological age, if you will, by their gait, the way that they walk. Is gait an accurate indicator of anything? And if so, can it be changed? Can it be improved? And if it can that affect our overall health and well-being?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So the way that we walk and the quality of our gait cycle is what it's called, is very much indicative of morbidity and mortality. And the marker that a lot of people will look at is walking speed. In order to walk fast, which is linked to longevity, you have to be able to do three things. The first thing is you have to be able to balance on one leg. Being able to stand on one leg allows you the ability to take a long step, which is what's linked to walking speed. The marker for single leg stability is 10 seconds. Can you stand on one leg for 10 seconds? If you cannot, that is a predictor of fall risk and therefore these other contributors to morbidity, mortality. The second aspect is to walk sufficiently, walk fast. You have to be able to absorb the energy from the ground and release it like a rubber band. So it's actually called elastic energy. And our fascia, our connective tissue in our body is literally like a rubber band. So we want to make sure that we are able to have a relationship with ground reaction forces and we keep our connective tissue hydrated. The third one is that we have to be able to go somewhere. So forward progression is a very important part of proper walking. And in order to go somewhere, to go forward, your foot has to be able to achieve what's called a rigid lever. So if you're sitting, essentially just put your legs into a calf raise and then look at your foot. And the position that your foot is in when you do a calf raise is called a rigid lever. It's kind of like the high heel foot position. That rigid lever is very unique to the human foot and what allows us to jump high, run fast, or walk the way that we need to. So if you want to walk fast to support longevity, you have to be able to balance single leg stability, find a relationship with ground reaction forces and keep your fascia like a rubber band. And then three, you have to have sufficient foot strength and mobility to achieve that rigid lever. That's going to be the components of proper walking.
Dr. Emily, you understand the science behind movement longevity better than most. I mean, you designed, created, and patented the first ever commercial mechanoception material that supports our foot health. Can you explain what mechanoception is and how this material actually works?
So mechanoception, we'll just call this touch. So they are touch nerves that are found in the palm of the hand and the bottom of the feet. And touch nerves, mechanoceptors, are an important part of how we maintain balance, how we read the ground, how we understand how to absorb impact forces. So it's really the basis of balance and movement is the stimulation of the nerves, the touch nerves in the bottom of the feet. Now, one of those nerves happens to be sensitive to texture or two-point discrimination, which is really Braille, or the best analogy would be Braille. So when your finger reads Braille, you are stimulating this very specific nerve, and that same nerve is what we stimulate with the Nobosso products. So you can see there's tiny little pyramids on the material and in fact on all of our products, those tiny little pyramids are mechanoceptive touch, texture, two-point discrimination. So the texture that we use is very specific. And that's where we get actually profound responses in people feeling their feet, balance, movement. And that's the way that I want people to always think about sensory stimulation, is that it's not arbitrary. There's very dialed in research specificity to what is delivered to the body.
While we're on big words that Mark doesn't understand, I also mentioned in the introduction, and I want to deliver on the promise that we would explain proprioception. What is proprioception? Do we lose it as we age? And why is it important for us to try to maintain it?
Proprioception is your awareness of your body in space, but it's joint specific. So we have these nerves that tell your brain where your joint is in space as you're standing or moving. So the more that we can perceive a joint and a shift in a joint, we maintain our balance and their stability. I'll give you an analogy or a story that hopefully the listeners can connect to. Is imagine that you are walking and maybe you're on like a little pebble path or you're stepping off a curb. And I think everyone at some point has done a little like whoop, right? Little bloop. And then you're like, whoo, okay, caught myself, right? That didn't sprain my ankle, but I felt the little wobble. What happened when you did bloop with your foot and your ankle is that you stimulated, you stretched these nerves that are called proprioceptors in the joint to then tell the brain that there was a shift in the position, and then your muscles contract to correct and keep you stable. Now that's different than mechanoception, which is touch. So the bottom of the foot is going to be touch or mechanoception. The ankle is going to be proprioception or joint position sense. They work together to control how we balance and maintain movement.
Dr. Emily, what are the most common conditions, if you will, that happen as we age, and how are you working to address those?
So as we age, the sensitivity of our nervous system starts to decrease. The quickness of our nervous system starts to decrease. We've had 60 plus years in shoes. So we are just very disconnected from our foot awareness. We need to bring a barefoot stimulation even in our home. A lot of people will wear shoes in their home. And unfortunately, a lot of those shoes have a high stack. So there's a lot of undersole, and then there's a lot of cushion. So there are things that are elevating your center of mass and then absorbing the perception, which is the cushion. So if we took away all of that stack and that cushion and became more sensorially stimulated, for me, I'm thinking of our socks, because one, there's grip, so you won't slip and fall in your home. But then as you walk around, you're going to get the textured stimulation so you can feel your feet. And one of the greatest contributors to falls in a home is a lack of awareness of your feet and the movement and the ground and how you're moving. Even if it is literally from the bedroom to the bathroom, you have to feel your feet. You have to feel your feet. And that means even in the middle of the night, if you have to go to the restroom, you have to feel your feet as you come out of the bed to the bathroom. And that is something that is not really being considered or taught or factored in when we look at falls in homes or independence in people's homes.
Are there any specific movements or exercises that you typically recommend to help people as they get older maintain movement longevity?
So one of my favorite exercises is called a forward lean, and this is a way to wake up your foot muscles. And what I want to emphasize here is that the power of foot muscles, a lot of energy goes towards our foot arch, right? So if you strengthen your foot, you will support your foot arch. I want to go even further than that. Where your foot strength really lies is in your toes. So toe strength, it's actually called toe flexor strength. So any exercise that teaches or incorporates anchoring or pushing your digits into the ground is going to optimize and really open up this cascade of foot stability. And that's actually what optimizes glute strength. So when you do the forward lean, is you are going to stand with your feet shoulder width apart. And if you want to join me as I'm talking through this, I welcome you. If feet are shoulder width apart. You're going to lift your toes, spread them nice and wide. You're going to find your foot tripod. So first met head, fifth met head, heel. Toes are lifted, spread, place them back down onto the floor. You're going to stand nice and tall. You're going to imagine that you are stiff as a board. Stay nice and tall, stiff as a board. And then you are going to ever so slightly lean your center of mass forward, but stay stiff as a board. So slightly lean and then bring it back vertical. Slightly lean, bring it back vertical. And do that one more time. Slightly lean, go back vertical. What should be happening and what I want you to notice is every time you lean forward, you should feel your toes go down into the ground. There's this anchoring reflex that happens in your digits, your toes, every time you lean your center of mass forward. It's actually a postural reflex, but it's an awesome way to wake up your foot muscles and your toe flexor strength. And I advise that my patients do this every single day, do it every morning.
You know, there are so many simple exercises that we can all do throughout the day. And obviously one that improves our posture, it builds toe, foot, and ankle strength, and improves our balance and stability is a good one for anyone of any age, because we're all interested in remaining active and independent. Our thanks to Dr. Emily Splickle. And for more information about movement longevity and maintaining your independence, visit Nabosso.com/Boulder for a Growing Boulder discount. Coming up, they've overcome one of their biggest fears and received some of life's greatest rewards: health, happiness, and friendship. We've got news. Watch.growingboulder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingboulder.com is now live.
Ever wish you were somewhere else in life? Let me let you in on a little secret. You can get just about anywhere you want to go, even at this stage, if you just have a plan. I'm Cecily Wilson, a journalist and stroke survivor, and at 55 years old, I'm reinventing myself as an author and founder of a nonprofit called Wild Legacy Group to support women caught up in life's transition. I was stuck too, just going through the motions. But my stroke forced me to ask myself some very tough questions. Who do you want to be? What do you want to do? That's when I realized the power of a plan. You need a plan to move and motivate you. Make it clear, concise, and something you're willing to commit to. It's empowering to have a plan, liberating and motivating. It keeps you moving forward and makes sure you're on the right track. Start by asking yourself, what's my dream? What's my goal? It may not come to you right away. Give it some time, step back, reflect, and then pursue it with passion and tenacity. Remember, it's not the destination, but the journey that fills your life with adventure and purpose. And that's Growing Boulder.
Thank you, Cecily Wilson. That's a really good setup for the DC Water Wizards. When was the last time that you tried something for the first time? Maybe even something that scared you. Learning to swim later in life can be a big challenge, but it's a challenge that a diverse group of older adults successfully took on together. And together, they're now helping one another overcome life's many other challenges.
Take your marks.
Maurice Butler is a 72-year-old photographer who joined the D.C. Water Wizards after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
I contracted it in 2017 and was told that I had 2 years to live. So I just decided that I would rather live life than sit around and mope about it. So I joined the team, and it kept me alive, to be perfectly honest. It really has. I think that's one of the reasons and I've been able to last so long is because, you know, I do this.
The Water Wizards are part of a unique adult swimming program in the nation's capital.
The District of Columbia is quite African American historically and currently, and there's a disparity in swimming and learn to swim access across the nation. So we don't have fees, and that encourages people of all walks of life to join our team. We're committed to the diversity and inclusion mission, and it's beautiful, as a matter of fact.
We are a large group of residents, diverse group of residents, and I love our diversity and our just social interaction with each other.
The Wizards were founded 20 years ago specifically to compete in the National Senior Games. The team has different ages, genders, races, and religions.
We do. We have a wonderful time together. And you left an item out. We all have different medical problems, too. So fortunately, I don't. But there's some of us that are really struggling, and they're doing fabulously well.
Go!
And beginner swimmers to swimmers who have been swimming since they're kids. And we all get along. We all help each other.
We have such a good time when we come to these swim meets. It really doesn't matter about winning or losing. Because to get here, we're winners.
Many team members didn't even learn to swim until their 60s or 70s. And what they've learned is something much bigger than swimming itself.
I think that anybody who learns to swim has sort of conquered a new environment. And when you do that, you learn there's probably no environment you can't conquer. And so to give somebody that gift that late in life, I think is really, truly special.
I did not imagine being a competitive swimmer at age 72. I was motivated by the Water Wizards, who encouraged me to join the team. I love the team. It encouraged seniors to become more active, and I want to be as physically fit as long as possible.
It's mostly about our physical condition more than it is about the competition. So we do this so that we can enjoy our old days and enjoy what we love to do, which is swimming.
It's about helping each other. It's about getting stronger. It's about challenging ourselves. And it's about staying young.
All the way!
Way to go, Ruth. Way to go, Ruth.
The team became their passion and eventually their purpose.
And so I had a purpose in life, and the Water Wizards gave me that purpose. You just have to continue to do the best that you can do until you can't do it anymore. I tell anybody, it saved my life, and I'm still here.
What's the moral of the story about life in general? What should we know about life?
Listen, it's short, enjoy it, be kind, and smile a lot.
The Water Wizards embody a couple of the most important lessons of growing bolder. Number one, don't be afraid to try new things, even some that scare you, because overcoming one fear can help you overcome others. And two, almost everything is better when you do it with and you have the support and encouragement of others. As Roy Fagan reminded us, life is short, enjoy it, be kind, and smile a lot. You know, by the way, swimming is considered one of the best activities for your overall health and well-being, especially as we age. It's low impact, it lowers inflammation, it improves your immune system, strengthens muscles and joints, and builds your cardiovascular system. So why not check with your local recreation department or YMCA to see if they offer adult learn-to-swim programs? You know, this story is why I always have a video camera with me at swimming meets. I simply struck up a conversation with a guy who was taking pictures, and the next thing you know, I had a few new friends and a great story to share. More proof that inspiration is everywhere, if only we'll take the time to look and engage, because that's Growing Bolder. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped.
chasing ideas as my map. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but
I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Half-right prejudice leap for, rip down all hate I scream. Foundation deep somehow. Oh, but
I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Hear the soldiers stand.